So look down at the shirt you're wearing right now. Just, take a second and really look at it.
Yeah, we usually just throw these things on without a second thought.
Exactly. But before that fabric was ever even cut, before the first thread was sewn, its exact weight, its specific dye lot, and its entire factory origin were likely negotiated in this like really tense, highly calculated conversation.
Right, probably inside some massive, brightly lit convention center halfway across the world.
Yeah. So today we're taking a fascinating look behind the curtain of the global supply chain. We really want to figure out how the clothes on your back are actually made. And, I mean, more importantly, how the decisions dictating your closet are engineered. Welcome to another deep dive.
It's a world most consumers never see, honestly, yet it dictates the flow of billions of dollars. I mean, today we're stepping away from the runways of Paris or Milan and walking straight onto the floor of the Global Sourcing Expo Australia.
And our guide for navigating this massive floor today is this incredibly detailed breakdown we have from the Kohan Textile Journal.
Yeah, they're a major textile and apparel media platform. They do a lot of really extensive coverage of the Middle East and Africa.
Right, and they've published this super comprehensive analysis of the mechanics driving this specific expo. So our mission today is to unpack these notes and really discover how global supply chains, international trade, and retail trends are physically pieced together in real time.
What stands out immediately in the reporting is just the sheer utilitarian nature of this event. I mean, the Kohan Textile Journal strips away all the consumer-facing marketing we're so used to seeing in fashion.
Totally.
We aren't looking at mood boards or seasonal color palettes here. We're examining the operational reality where abstract design concepts are basically forced to prove they can become tangible, profitable goods.
Let's start right there, actually, with the atmosphere of the room, because the notes make it abundantly clear what this expo is not.
Right.
Like, there are no catwalks, there are no celebrities sitting in the front row. It is decidedly like an anti-fashion show.
Yeah, completely. It's an event built entirely for professionals who buy for a living.
Right, so we're talking retailers, wholesalers, sourcing managers, product developers, private label teams.
And just for anyone listening who isn't deep in the retail weeds, a private label team is basically the group that creates those in-house store brands you see at a major retailer.
Like a Target or a Zara, right?
Exactly. And the focus for all these people is 100% on practical outcomes. It's all about finding reliable suppliers and comparing raw manufacturing capabilities.
But I mean, if you strip away the runway models and the styling and all that dramatic lighting, wait, I almost used an ellipsis there in my head. If you strip all that
What
away,
are they actually looking at?
what are these buyers looking at to determine if a factory is worth millions of dollars?
They're looking for operational maturity. Like in a typical fashion setting, visual overload is kind of the point, you know?
Right, you're selling a vibe, an aesthetic.
But aesthetics do not guarantee that a factory can actually procure the raw cotton, cut the patterns, and then deliver 50,000 units of a specific garment on time and on budget.
Yeah, those are two very different skill sets.
Exactly. So by removing the distraction of the trend, buyers are forced to evaluate the actual mechanics of a supplier's business: cost, reliability, scale, compliance.
Wow.
If a manufacturer is spending real money to fly their entire team from Bangladesh to Australia to set up a booth, I mean, they aren't trying to wow a buyer with a clever silhouette.
Right.
They're trying to wow them with their daily production capacity and their quality control metrics.
It really makes you realize how much of fashion is just like a massive math equation disguised as art.
That is actually the perfect translation of what happens on this floor. The expo aggregates expert-ready manufacturers and serious buyers into a single space, drastically reducing the friction of global sourcing.
Because if you're a sourcing manager, your entire job is basically minimizing risk while maximizing margin, right?
Exactly. You need to know if the person standing right across from you can scale up production if a product goes viral on TikTok.
Or if their supply chain will just totally collapse under the pressure.
Right. Which happens all the time.
Which brings up a fascinating logistical challenge, I think.
Yeah.
How do you actually orchestrate a physical meeting for all these global players?
It's a huge undertaking.
Yeah, the Kohan Journal details this massive dual city format the expo runs in Australia. It's not just like one big annual blowout
Yeah,
party.
but it's highly strategic.
They run a June edition in Sydney, located at the International Convention Center in Darling Harbour. And the notes say this spot was chosen specifically because it sits right on top of major business districts and transport networks.
Yeah, accessibility is is key there.
Right. And then 6 months later, they pack the entire concept up and run a November edition in Melbourne at the MCEC, which taps into that city's massive infrastructure and their strong apparel industry presence.
And the source notes, this mirrors the exact buying cycles of the Australian and New Zealand markets, what they call the ANZ region.
So June supports mid-year planning, and November aligns with late-year retail prep.
Exactly. The geography and the chronology are engineered purely for commerce. It is a highly, highly deliberate schedule.
I have to play devil's advocate here, though. I mean, we live in a world of essentially frictionless global e-commerce.
Sure.
Buyers have Zoom, they have instant messaging on their phones, they have like 3D digital rendering software for garments that look hyper-realistic.
Yeah.
Does physically moving thousands of people and literally tons of fabric between two cities 6 months apart actually matter anymore?
It does.
Because it just feels incredibly analog for a multi-billion dollar industry.
It is super analog, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But retail is fundamentally bound by physical realities. I mean, you cannot upload a winter coat to a customer, right?
Yeah, true.
Retailers are locked into incredibly rigid seasonal calendars. Yep. Spring, summer, fall, winter, back to school, those big holiday rushes.
Yeah, it never stops.
And every single physical item sitting on a store shelf has a lead time that stretches back 8, 12, sometimes even 18 months. The planning window is just completely unforgiving.
So if a buyer misses that window by like a week, they don't just lose a few sales.
They potentially miss the entire season. The financial penalty is catastrophic.
Wow.
So meeting the right suppliers at the exact moment a buyer's budgeting window opens is quite literally the difference between capturing a market and having nothing to sell.
That makes a lot of sense.
And to your point about Zoom and digital rendering,
yeah.
I mean, those tools are phenomenal for maintaining an existing relationship with a factory.
Right, if you already know them.
Exactly. If you've worked with them for 5 years, sure, send a digital file. But for establishing a new supply chain.
Yeah.
For validating a factory's technical capabilities and ensuring they aren't, you know, secretly outsourcing your order to some unvetted third party, you have to be in the room.
You need to look them in the eye.
Absolutely. By holding the event in Sydney in June and Melbourne in November, the Expo is physically placing these international suppliers right in the lap of the ANZ buyers at the precise moment their seasonal checkbooks are open.
They're essentially setting up a toll booth on the exact road the buyers have to drive down every 6 months.
A very lucrative toll booth, yeah.
Yeah.
And one that saves both sides months of international travel.
Right, which leads us right into the goods themselves. The Kohan text outlines four main pillars that divide the convention floor. We've got apparel, footwear and accessories, home furnishings, and textiles.
Right.
The shifts happening in the apparel and textile sections are particularly wild to me, honestly. In apparel, buyers are evaluating everything from like basic t-shirt programs to highly complex full seasonal collections.
Mm-hmm.
But the standout trend highlighted in the notes is this explosion of what they call full service solutions.
This is huge. It really represents a massive evolution in how retail brands operate today.
Yeah, the source describes these full service manufacturers as handling absolutely everything.
Everything from the initial pattern development, sourcing the raw materials, cutting, sewing.
Even managing the final packaging so it's literally ready to hit the store floor.
Right.
It honestly reminds me of hiring a ghostwriter who not only writes your entire book, but also prints it, binds it, slaps your name on the cover, and ships it to the bookstore for you.
That's a great analogy.
But wait. If a manufacturer in Vietnam is doing the designing, the sourcing, the sewing, and even printing the barcode, I mean, isn't the retail brand just a marketing shell at that point?
Well, it's the debate, isn't it?
Aren't they just slapping a logo on someone else's homework? How do they maintain any sort of unique quality control?
That is the central tension of the modern retail model right now. Many brands today are actively choosing to remain incredibly lean.
Right.
They want to focus their capital entirely on marketing, customer acquisition, and reading consumer data while completely outsourcing the heavy physical lifting.
Huh.
But here's the thing. They aren't just buying the manufacturer's labor. They're buying their operational maturity.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
It means the brand maintains control through incredibly strict compliance contracts, very detailed technical specifications, and iterative sampling. So the factory acts as the hands, but the brand still acts as the brain dictating the strict parameters of what those hands actually create.
Okay, the brain dictating the hands. I like that. That makes sense. But then we hit the textiles pillar, and the dynamic seems to shift completely.
Oh, completely.
The Kohan Journal specifically notes that textiles are where real differentiation begins. Like, this isn't just picking a nice shade of blue out of a catalog.
Definitely not.
The notes detail buyers evaluating technical specifications, finishes, consistency, and fabric performance. But again, mechanically, how is a buyer doing this?
Right.
How do you evaluate the consistency of a factory's output just by standing at a 10 by 10 booth looking at a little square swatch of fabric?
You are touching on exactly why physical sourcing cannot be digitized.
Yeah.
The evaluation goes way beyond just looking at a pretty swatch.
Yeah.
A veteran buyer will examine the weave under a magnifying loop. They will physically stretch it to test the recovery of the elastane. And they'll deeply assess the hand feel of complex performance knits.
So it's very hands-on.
Very. But the physical touch is honestly just the entry ticket. The real magic is the conversations happening over that little square of fabric. They're essentially intense technical interrogations.
Wait, what does that interrogation actually sound like? Like, what are they asking?
They're asking about the microscopic reality of the manufacturing process. Things like, how does this chemical water repellent finish hold up after exactly 50 wash cycles?
Wow, 50.
Yeah. Or, what is the specific variance in dye lots from one roll of fabric to the next? And think about why that matters, right?
Does a tiny variance really matter that much?
Oh, absolutely. Today you have a red fabric that cures just 2% darker than the prototype.
Okay.
That tiny variance can literally ruin a $500,000 order because suddenly the jacket sleeves won't match the body panels when they're finally assembled at the factory.
Oh my gosh, that's a disaster.
Exactly. So the buyer is testing the supplier's technical knowledge and their internal quality control systems right there in the aisle. They're looking for ironclad proof that the supplier can replicate that tiny perfect swatch across a 50,000-yard order without a single flaw.
So this casual 10-minute conversation in an aisle is actually a high-stakes audit to prevent a $500,000 mistake?
Without a doubt. The fabric swatch is merely the conversation starter to, like, audit the manufacturer's operational soul.
I love that phrase. And to avoid those catastrophic mistakes, buyers clearly need a lot of options. Which is why the Kohan Journal emphasizes this critical reality of modern retail. Sourcing is no longer about relying on a single country.
No, it's way too risky now.
The expo intentionally aggregates a wildly diverse list of suppliers. We're talking about factories from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Vietnam, Indonesia, Turkey, and several others, all brought under one roof.
The sheer aggregation of global capacity in one single room is just staggering.
It sounds less like a trade show and more like a financial war room for global supply chains.
Yeah.
And just think about the time compression. Normally, a buyer would spend weeks sending emails, making late-night phone calls because of crazy time zones, and taking multi-day flights to inspect a factory in Vietnam.
Only to get right back on a plane to vet an alternative option in Turkey.
Exactly. But here, they are conducting a year's worth of global travel and stress testing simply by walking down an aisle. They can compare pricing, production timelines, communication quality, and compliance standards side by side in a single afternoon.
It's incredible. The compression of that vetting cycle is an enormous competitive advantage for these brands.
I bet.
What usually takes months of identifying targets, arranging visas, and initiating samples is basically condensed into 3 days.
That's wild.
A buyer can meet a supplier from Pakistan at 10 a.m., cross-reference their pricing with a supplier from Indonesia at 11 a.m., and initiate sample development before they even go to lunch. But we really need to look at why this level of geographic diversity is so critical right now.
Because the goal isn't just hunting for the absolute cheapest labor rate anymore.
Far from it. The goal today is survival.
Survival.
Yeah. Think about the massive disruptions we've seen globally over the past few years.
Oh, sure.
If you've ever tried to buy a specific winter boot or maybe a staple piece of furniture and found it inexplicably out of stock everywhere for 6 months.
Yeah, that's happened to me so many times recently.
Right. That is what a supply chain failure looks like on the consumer end. Relying on a single country or a single region for all your manufacturing is a massive liability now.
Because if something happens.
Exactly. A geopolitical conflict, a natural disaster shutting down a major port, a sudden tariff hike.
Yeah, if all your inventory is trapped in that one location, your brand could literally suffocate.
So building this diverse network right on the convention floor is essentially building a defense mechanism. It is the ultimate insurance policy.
Right.
By engaging with suppliers across different regions, say, setting up a relationship with a highly responsive factory in Turkey for quick turnaround trend items.
While securing a massive facility in Bangladesh for high-volume, low-margin basics.
Exactly. The buyer is actively de-risking their company's future. They're creating alternative pathways so that if one region goes offline, the brand keeps breathing.
But actively managing that level of geopolitical risk while simultaneously checking the tensile strength of a fabric swatch. I mean, how does one human brain process all that data on a chaotic convention floor?
It's tough.
The Kohan Textile Journal highlights a vital component of the expo designed specifically to address this, the Global Sourcing Seminar Series.
Yeah.
This isn't just casual networking, it's a strategic playbook. The seminars cover some really heavy operational topics, sustainability and compliance, navigating supply chain risk, shifting consumer behaviors, and notably the integration of AI in sourcing and product development.
That AI piece is huge right now.
But my question is, how does an algorithm actually help a buyer standing in front of two identical cotton samples, trying to decide between a supplier in Bangladesh and one in Vietnam?
It's a really critical question because the fear is always that the technology will replace the human touch.
Right.
But the human hands feeling the drape of a fabric are irreplaceable. What AI does in this scenario is synthesize that overwhelming matrix of risk data we just discussed.
Okay.
A human cannot track real-time global shipping fluctuations, regional labor compliance records, and raw material price spikes simultaneously in their head.
No, definitely not. So what does that actually look like in practice for the buyer walking to the booth?
Picture a cotton shortage brewing in a specific region of India, or maybe a sudden labor strike at a major European port.
Okay.
In the past, a buyer might not find out about that bottleneck until their shipment was already delayed by 3 weeks.
Which is too late.
Exactly. Today, an AI tool acts as a pre-filter. Before the buyer even introduces themselves to the supplier from Vietnam, their tablet has already flagged the potential shipping bottleneck and cross-referenced it with that specific factory's historical on-time delivery rates.
Oh, wow.
So the buyer isn't relying on gut instinct anymore. They are walking into the booth armed with synthesized data, knowing the exact vulnerabilities to interrogate.
It basically gives them X-ray vision into the supply chain.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
They aren't asking the AI to pick the shirt. They are asking the AI what questions to fire at the factory owner.
Precisely. And that's why the Kohan Journal places such heavy emphasis on having a strict preparation playbook.
Right.
The most successful teams do not just wander the aisles looking for inspiration. They arrive with defined sourcing objectives. They bring rigorous technical specification sheets. They shortlist targets based on their risk models.
And crucially, they execute what is known as fast qualification.
Yes, fast qualification is critical.
The source mentions that term. Walk us through the mechanics of fast qualification. What does that mean?
Fast qualification is the ability to walk up to a booth and, within 60 seconds, determine if a conversation is actually worth your time.
60 seconds?
Yep. You are immediately probing to find out if the person standing there actually owns the manufacturing facility or if they're just a trader brokering deals.
Ah, right.
You ask highly technical questions about their daily output capacity, and you demand proof of their environmental compliance certifications right up front.
No messing around.
None. If you have your AI-driven risk data and your technical specs ready, you can clinically qualify or disqualify a booth in minutes. It allows you to cover immense ground.
It totally transforms the entire exhibition from a passive browsing experience into this highly tuned, almost surgical business tool.
Because the stakes are simply too high for anyone to be winging it. The financial weight of these decisions demands that level of precision.
Wow. You know, when we pull all these threads together from the Kohan Textile Journal, a very clear picture emerges of the Global Sourcing Expo Australia.
It really does.
It is a finely tuned engine designed specifically for the Australian and New Zealand markets, constructed to turn theoretical fashion concepts into tangible, de-risked business realities.
Right.
By strategically bringing the world's diverse manufacturing base to Sydney and Melbourne, in perfect alignment with those rigid retail calendars we talked about, the expo delivers real connections, stress-tested suppliers, and tangible outcomes.
It's honestly a brilliant mechanism. It reveals the staggering, almost entirely invisible coordination required to produce every single item we purchase.
Which brings us right back to you, our listener, and that shirt you're wearing right now. Think about the invisible journey of your own possessions.
It's kind of mind-blowing.
We've just walked through the intense vetting, the AI data synthesis, The frantic search for global diversity and the microscopic technical interrogations that go into a single thread before it ever has a chance to reach a store hanger near you.
The amount of human energy and global synchronization behind a simple cotton t-shirt is just phenomenal once you understand the mechanics behind it.
It really is. And it leaves us with a final thought to ponder. We started this deep dive by talking about inspecting the raw ingredients and the supply trucks of the fashion industry.
Yeah.
Next time you look at the tag on the back of your collar, it might boldly say made in Vietnam or made in Turkey.
Sure.
But based on everything we've unpacked today regarding massive supply chain diversification, AI risk models, and full service ghostwriting, what if that tag is actually lying by omission?
Ooh.
What if the true origin of your shirt isn't a single country at all, but rather a complex, deeply calculated decision made in a split-second conversation halfway across the world, right on the floor of a convention center in Sydney?
It is a really thought-provoking premise. I mean, the tag only ever tells the end of the manufacturing story, right?
Right.
It never reveals the intense global war room where the ingredients were actually chosen.
Exactly. Keep diving deep, keep questioning the everyday world around you, and we'll catch you on the next one.